This is an author interview from the JAMA Network. This is Jan Engmeyer with JAMA Pediatrics. It's known that poverty is not good for a child's development. A new study used neuroimaging to investigate the effects of poverty on brain development and also to look at the mediators involved, especially the impact of caregivers. Dr. Joan Luby from the Department of Psychiatry at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis is the lead author on the study, and Dr. Charles Nelson from Harvard Medical School and Boston's Children's Hospital is the author of an accompanying editorial. Welcome to you both. Dr. Luby, what's new about your study? How do these study findings extend the current knowledge of the negative effects of poverty on children?
Well, as you mentioned, it's been well known that poverty is a very robust risk factor for poor developmental outcomes more generally, and that's been in the literature for many decades. More recently, literature that has looked at brain imaging has also established that there are smaller brain regions that are associated with poverty. What our study does is essentially adds to that literature, but also adds new information about the mediating mechanisms and basically shows that maternal support or primary caregiving support appears to be a very important mechanistic factor in how poverty negatively impacts specific regions of the brain.
Dr. Nelson, when you read this study before you wrote the editorial, what struck you as the most novel aspect or aspects?
I think it would be the last point that Dr. Luby made, that rather than end the paper by saying, so growing up in poverty is bad for the brain, we actually now can point to a mechanism that might be underpinning this, and that would be essentially quality of caregiving. And I think what I was particularly heartened by is that that is a very similar finding to work of our own in studying institutionalized children in Romania, where we find that caregiving quality is a mediator for many, many positive outcomes. And of course, if you go in the other direction, as quality of caregiving declines, so does the risk of any number of other problems. So I think what's exciting about this is that it points to what may be the player here. The other part is that the areas of the brain that are most vulnerable to this make really good theoretical sense, in particular the hippocampus and the amygdala.
Dr. Luby, how does that neuroimaging deepen our understanding of child development?
Well, neuroimaging data has added a more concrete body of data to other general developmental outcomes. So even though in the scientific literature there's been a very vast array and very deep contributions from people who are doing longitudinal studies, those tend to be behavioral and observational. And while I don't have any trouble feeling convinced by that, the general public tends to find that when you show them data that directly shows changes in the brain, they find these outcomes much more convincing. So I don't really think that it's inherently more powerful than behavioral data, except that it's really more convincing to the public, and in that sense, it's very important.
Dr. Nelson, what are your thoughts on the neuroimaging results?
Well, I think that what I find particularly exciting is that we know from a vast literature, both in the animal and the human, that stress can have negative consequences on brain development, in particular regions of the brain that deal with emotion and memory, and that was supported by this paper. The second, I think, though, goes back to the issue of caregiving quality. So there's a strong public health message here as well, which is that we now know where possibly to look when we're trying to understand why children growing up in really adverse circumstances or poor homes, where we might do effective interventions. So, for example, maternal support or parental support, despite growing up in poverty, might be something that would prove protective for these kids.
Dr. Luby, how about you? What do you think are the public policy implications of the study findings?
Yes, I completely agree with what Dr. Nelson just said. I do think that what's most important has to do with the public policy implications, and that was why we were very excited by these data, because, of course, we all know that poverty is a bad thing. Poverty is an increasingly pervasive problem in the United States, and everybody would like to solve the problem of poverty, but that's a very, very difficult problem to solve, and it's a very global problem to solve, even with our best efforts and energies focused on it, which they currently are not. That's going to take a great deal of time to solve, and young children don't have that kind of time. So the study really does point to a very specific, feasible target that basically says, in order to help children's development and achieve better outcomes, we actually can target caregiving as opposed to immediately solving the entire global problem. And that we know is very feasible. There are many programs that have successfully and cost-effectively done that. So this really just lends more support to that movement.
Dr. Nelson, what do you think should happen next here?
One would be to look at other populations other than children growing up in poverty. If we construe poverty as a form of early life adversity, the question is, would similar findings hold with kids exposed to other forms of adversity other than poverty? But I think a more exciting venue, and this is an extension of what Dr. Luby was saying, would be to actually do an intervention study. So, for example, there's the Nurse Family Partnership Program that helps young new moms, but there are also economists doing cash transfer programs. And in both cases, the effect sizes are still fairly modest. And it would be very interesting to do something like a randomized controlled trial where the intervention really is some form of support for parents and parent education that's closely monitored to see if that can offset the negative effects of growing up in poor homes or homes without access to adequate resources.
How about you, Dr. Luby? What would you like to see happen next?
Well, I agree with the latter point. I mean, I do think a randomized controlled trial, in terms of sort of the next steps that are most important for the public health, that might not be the next step that's most important to understanding the brain mechanisms, but the next step in terms of what's most important to advance the public health would be a randomized controlled trial, just as Dr. Nelson described. And I do think that we're at the point where we could launch something like that. I do think it's also tremendously important in terms of thinking how to use our resources most wisely and get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of early interventions and enhanced outcomes.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that you think we haven't mentioned or that would be important to point out?
The only other thing that I wonder about, and I'm guessing Dr. Nelson might be interested in this too based on his body of work, is the question of when exposure to other stresses has the most damaging effect. Is it earlier in life? Is it during the preschool period? And given what we know about the brain being more neuroplastic earlier in life, there's a lot of reason to believe that that early exposure and the need for supportive caregiving early in life is particularly important.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think the issue of timing and sensitive periods is essential here because in this study, the children were older, but of course, they had been in these environments since they were born and, in fact, since before they were born. So it begs the question of how early these effects would actually be observed, which then speaks to the issue of how early you'd have to intervene.
Thank you, Dr. Joan Luby and Dr. Charles Nelson, for talking with us about the effects of poverty on childhood brain development and the mediating effect of caregiving and stressful life events. This is Jan Engmeyer with JAMA Pediatrics. For more JAMA Network podcasts, visit us online at jama.com.